This morning I informed the cabinet that I'll ask the president to dissolve the 32nd Dáil. I've always said that the election should happen at the best time for the country. Now is that time.
And therefore, if that is achieved, that you do have the possibility of creating greater growth in the society and creating better jobs.
Are we certain that we actually have the critical mass of public infrastructure and public service capacity to ensure that we can keep this golden goose that we have and that we can actually be the family that makes future generations better off?
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
This is Business at the Ballot Box, a special general election podcast series brought to you by IBEC, the voice of Irish business. There is going to be a lot of coverage of this election over the next couple of weeks, but this is the place where you will hear the issues and the information that are most relevant to you, the Irish business community. The choices we make in the 2020 general election will shape our future, that of our children and of our country. And we believe that the voice of Irish business is central to ensuring that the choices made are the right ones. I'm Patrick Haughey, and throughout this podcast series, I will be meeting some of Ireland's most successful and respected business leaders and influencers in the company of IBEX leadership and policy experts. Every day between now and February 8th, we'll be exploring the issues that matter most to you and your workforce, and also hearing directly from Ireland's business leaders about what the government needs to prioritise in order to help business, and in turn society, reach their full potential. And you can join the conversation on Twitter and LinkedIn using the hashtag BeTheVoice. You can also email us at info@ibec.ie. And coming up in our very first episode, we will be hearing from IBEC CEO Danny McCoy, who has some very strong words for the next government of this country about what it needs to prioritise in the next programme for government and the cost of inaction.
Let's be brave. Let's put down that infrastructure. And yes, it may cost more than some of the hurlers on the ditch might, you know, spoof and say they deliver that. But you know what? Take the risk.
A little later, Danny will be joined by Patricia King, General Secretary of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, to discuss the need for a new social dialogue. And we'll also feature a short interview with Dalton Phillips, CEO of the Dublin Airport Authority, who clearly lays out his vision for the future of Ireland's connectivity and also lays down a marker for those in charge of planning regulation in Ireland.
It's not an election issue because you don't see it, you know, as a vote winner, but in terms of the treacle that's slowing down this economy, it's a disaster and it needs to be sorted out and it needs leadership.
All that coming up in today's episode of IBEX Business at the Ballot Box.
IBEX, the voice of Irish business.
Danny McCoy, it has been almost 4 years since the last general election. To paint the picture and to set the scene for us, what is Ireland today compared with Ireland almost 4 years ago? What's it like?
Well, the irony of it is, well, it's much better, to put that in context. But ironically, 2016, the economy was in pretty good shape as well. So even though much maligned keeping the recovery going, it was clear from the statistics that Ireland was in a strong place. Probably since about 2014, we could see the massive investment coming in on the business side. And that's become really, really large. But just in terms of the labour market, and probably one of the features that we have to address in our society right now, in that time, there's been 400,000 new jobs. Now, you know, that's a lot of jobs, but the actual ratio of private to public has been 25-1, which is a stunning, stunning imbalance.
So essentially, the private sector has been pumping huge amounts of investment into the country, but that has not been matched in any sense or form by the government.
Well, the government, in fairness, has been increasing public investment and has been trying to address some issues, but the sheer scale of the private sector investment and population increase and workforce increase meant that our ratios from public to private have just gone out of kilter. And, you know, this may or may not, depending on your persuasion, be a big deal or not, but clearly as a society gets rich like Ireland is now, they want public services and public infrastructure of high quality and high quantity. And so we really need to have that social dialogue, that national discussion about how are we going to allocate the resources that are within our society to ensure that we underpin what is a kind of a golden time for the Irish population.
So you said it depends on your viewpoint as to whether that ratio is a big deal or not. In your viewpoint, is it a big deal?
Oh, I think it is. I think what we really want, and you see it from business, I hear it from our members, they want more planners, more quality planners, more regulation, actually, because regulation and good regulation is actually a benefit for business. So they want more security, they want more guards, more defence, I'm sure, will be an issue as well to protect the assets. We want more GPs, we want more teachers, we fundamentally want more public services. Whether they're provided by full-time public servants is a different discussion. I'm agnostic on that right now, but what I want to identify is that we're critically allowing the society and those mechanisms of society to get too small for the scale of the business community we have here. And one diagnosis of that, say the business community should get smaller. Well, that would be the wrong proposition, because it is the resources coming from the business community that's supplementing Irish households. Right now, Irish households in aggregate are living within their means. Within their means. We see that in the high savings ratios. There's still a high standard of living in terms of the consumption patterns, are among the top in the world right now. But how are they being subvented? Through the corporation tax windfalls. That's not sustainable. And the chances are that the corporation tax revenues are as likely to rise as they are to fall in the short term. So we really need to have a way of capturing this positive moment, ensuring that we underpin our public infrastructure, the rankings of our third level institutions internationally being one of those canary in the coal mine moments, but also clearly what people are talking about in terms of quality of life, as we call it here, better lives, better business. It's around the planning, infrastructure, housing, and fundamentally that issue around sustainability.
So, as you say, we're at this critical moment. We're on the eve of the next general election. From your perspective as CEO of IBEC, what would you like to see delivered by the next government?
I think we've got four key things in the IBEC campaign for this general election. Talk about that public infrastructure I've been talking about, and also the quality and perhaps the quantity of public service. I think the other issue is that we now live in a world that we talk about as being the kind of game changer for Ireland, which is the corporate tax work, the OECD being taking place. This has given us huge amounts of revenue. Well, the corporate tax world is just one symptom of a world that's changing. So is the future of work been changing, the patterns of how people work. So we need a new commission on taxation to take a look at the whole taxation system to make sure that it's competitive but also incentivizing. The third element is clearly the environment, the sustainability about the environment. But not just that, it's also about a sustainable all island. So I think the issue about the all island dimension also needs a point of reference in this general election. And the final piece is about lawmaking. The last administration had to put up with private members' bills coming from all ends of the spectrum. They are damaging because they don't go through the same process as a government brought forward legislation. It goes in on the hoof and sometimes it gets through. And even if it doesn't get through, a lot of them died on the end of the administration, the private member bills. They create uncertainty, they create anticipation, they create a lot of confusion. So we really need better lawmaking. So that's why we need a stable government. So in their wisdom, hopefully the electorate will give us a steady government for the next 5 years, because the next 5 years will be critical.
One of my final questions. It's very hard to have a conversation today about business and the business environment without looking at the quality of life for the people employed by those businesses. So this, I think, is going to be a really central part of this election and what the next government has to deliver.
Indeed it is, but you know, the solution is in the hands of the households, because the one thing we've been pointing out for quite some time now, Irish households have the money. They may not want to give it up willingly to the government. They're spending it on things that they enjoy, but ultimately the problem is they may be enjoying it and maybe the right decision for them individually, but collectively we're going the wrong direction in terms of provision of public services. The things that people want in terms of childcare, transportation, health, education, security, have to be provided by the Irish households. The good news is we have the money. The bad news is we're redirecting it in all the wrong ways at the moment.
So how do we convince Irish households to part with that money to put it towards the things that we collectively need?
Well, I think the government needs to start bringing in the private sector, not just in the delivery of services, but also in the funding and financing. So you need to take the money from the households. And so you might say, well, that's a, you know, euphemistically way of saying taxation. It doesn't have to be taxation. You can borrow the money from the households, pay it back in a future date by innovative measures. You use the bonds to finance the things that you want. Take the universities, issue a university bond with a key performance indicator that they go up the international rankings. So they use the money whatever way they need and see fit to get up the rankings, and then charge higher fees to the students who want that higher brand to repay back the households. Make it a virtuous circle. Right now we're in a debt loop.
Is there an element of distrust among Irish households that maybe there have been times where we feel that the tax money that is paid hasn't resulted in the level of service we believe it should? And so now maybe we're distrustful of increasing that amount of tax or whatever way the money is given to those services.
Let's say that was accurate and true, and it may well be. It's also quite a convenient way of not putting your hand in your pocket to make up an excuse. So I think the true cost is not what something that exists costs. It's actually its complete absence. The Children's Hospital is a classic example. True cost for our society is it doesn't exist right now. When it's delivered, then we can judge what we think the cost will be. But you know what? Even in that case, over time, these always pay for themselves. We've had the same debate about the tunnel, the M50. Without that infrastructure, we wouldn't have the business model we have today. Let's be brave. Let's put down that infrastructure. And yes, it may cost more than some of the hurlers on the ditch might, you know, spoof and say they deliver it at. But you know what? Take the risk. The thing I like is that you may not always get it right. The people who built the canals, they were in the act of connectivity, just like broadband, to get the coast to the Midlands. They had a go. They spent the money. They got it wrong. The railways overtook it. But at least they had the guts in that society to take a chance. We're rich. We should take the chance too.
Final question. You mentioned two very significant words at the start of this interview, and that is social dialogue and the need for more social dialogue in order to collectively deliver this. Explain briefly what you mean by that.
Well, I think, you know, businesses who actually reflect on where we are right now have the relationship with their employees. The employees are looking for more wages. Employers, where they can, and demand is high right now, and need for the scarcity of labour, are paying the wages. We see the wage growth and we see the incomes of Irish households growing at about 5% a year. But you know, when the employees come in, what they're demanding is higher wages to compensate for the social infrastructure that's absent, be that housing or transportation, etc. If we both stay in that relationship within the business and forget about the wider society, then we'll be just, you know, getting nowhere fast. We'll be repeating the act of insanity to keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. We've got to break that now and get in some of the other actors, like the trade unions, also the NGOs around the environment, and have a social dialogue that says, we're going to have to redirect resources somewhere else. Employers may have to pay, but they can't simultaneously keep paying higher wages and higher taxes for the infrastructure. We need to start emphasising, in return for modest wage increases, we direct some resources into the state to provide the infrastructure that underpin our business model and what our employees need.
You mentioned trade unions there. In just a couple of minutes' time, we're going to be joined and you're going to have a conversation with Patricia King of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions on this very issue. So you stay with us, Danny.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
Business at the Ballot Box. Be the voice.
And as I mentioned, Patricia King of ICTU, the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, will be right here very shortly, as will Dalton Phillips, CEO of the Dublin Airport Authority, who has a very strong message for government around connectivity and planning regulation. But first, I wanted to take a quick opportunity to tell you a little bit more about this series and what you can expect between now and February 8th. We believe that the voice of Ireland's business community is a critical one in this general election, because by creating an environment where business can grow and thrive, the government is also helping to create the resources to tackle some of the big challenges that exist in Irish society right now. It takes a lot of funding to build world-class public services and infrastructure, to solve homelessness, to lead on climate change, and to achieve all of those things that create a successful and sustainable society. Business can be a significant part of that funding model as long as conditions are right. And this podcast series is all about how those correct conditions can be created. We will be bringing you a wide and diverse range of voices as part of this discussion and this debate. We'll be hearing from business leaders like Anne O'Leary of Vodafone, Gary McGann, chairman of Flutter and Aritzia, Pat McCann of Dalata Group, Oliver Looms of Diageo, Carolan Lennon of Ayr, and many, many more. We'll also hear from campaigners, commentators and crusaders with very unique viewpoints. People like Oisín Coughlan of Friends of the Earth, Brendan Courtney, a prominent campaigner on elder care, economist Colin McCarthy, and of course, trade union leader Patricia King, who is going to be joining us here very, very shortly. What we hope by the end of this series is that you will feel empowered to tell the general election candidates how creating the right conditions for business can improve living standards, generate tax revenue, and create exciting new job opportunities. So let's get back to business. My next guest is a man who has a very clear vision for the future of Ireland's connectivity and also a very clear opinion on what needs to happen to planning regulation to allow that future vision to happen.
IBEC, the voice of Irish business.
My name is Dalton Phillips. I'm the CEO of DAA. So DAA operates in 14 countries around the world. It's one of Ireland's hidden multinationals. We operate and run airports, six in total, and we run duty-free businesses around the world. Our biggest airport in the state is obviously Dublin Airport. 85% of all passengers in and out of the country go through Dublin Airport.
Connectivity is obviously a central pillar of Ireland's success, business success. Everything that comes through Ireland is around connectivity. Where are we at in terms of connectivity at the moment?
Well, we're a large rock on the western periphery of Europe. We've got no land border. We're absolutely dependent on air connectivity in and out of this country for trade, tourism, FDI, and it needs to be absolutely central within government's policy going forward to remain highly connected.
So what does a policy that supports connectivity look like?
Well, connectivity means infrastructure, and we've seen over and over from the birth of the canals through to the roads that we know today, the rail, that infrastructure costs money. It's normally eye-watering when you look at it, but history has shown every single time that investment today always trumps investment tomorrow. So for air connectivity, we need to invest in infrastructure to ensure that we are connected with the rest of the world.
So obviously DAA has very ambitious plans in terms of how to build that infrastructure and what it should look like. Would you like to describe that, your vision?
So if you take Dublin Airport, which is the nation's predominant airport, as I said, 85% of all passengers in and out of the country, it's absolutely full. You can't put another flight in there. So we're building a new runway. And we have a €2 billion investment programmed over the next 5 years. But that investment costs money. We receive no Exchequer funding whatsoever. In fact, we pay a sizable dividend to the Exchequer each year. But we have a government policy which essentially is about driving pricing down, which is at odds with what's going on with the European market. And what I mean by that is that we have a max charge that we can levy on airlines, which is 50% lower than what we see in the rest of Europe. Now, there isn't a single product or service in Ireland that I'm aware of that's 10% lower than anything else in Europe. And yet, on connectivity, which fuels our economy, because we need connectivity to the rest of the world, we are heading towards a serial level of underinvestment in a key strategic asset.
So is this essentially the decision by the CAR to not allow, or to, is it to cut landing charges or not allow you to increase landing charges?
No, it's to cut. So an over 20% investment, an over 20% reduction in our pricing. Now, I speak to all the other CEOs of European airports. Our charges are 50% lower than theirs. And yet we need to invest in our infrastructure, not for Dublin Airport, not for Dublin, but for Ireland Inc., because 85% of people come in and out of our key airport, and it costs money.
Does the CAR or the government see the reduction of those landing charges actually as a way to fuel connectivity and travel through Ireland by encouraging people to come through, or is there another motivation?
Well, the purpose is to remain competitive. The problem is that if you are competitive and then you move your pricing to such a level that actually it becomes unsustainable, it becomes a very short-term policy. And in a world where sustainability is such a critical part of the agenda today, we need to be investing in sustainable infrastructure that lowers our carbon footprint, that increases our connectivity around the world. And in this particular case of regulation, you know, it's regulation gone mad.
And of course, central to development and the development of key infrastructure is the planning system and planning regulations. What are your thoughts on that in Ireland?
Well, planning is the bucket behind the boat. It slows the economy down. It's preventing the economy moving up, not just one gear, but two gears. It's convoluted. There's a lack of accountability. It's complex. It takes too long. And it is an absolute break on this economy, and it needs to be sorted out. Somebody needs to be put on this to get to the bottom of why it's such a slow process.
Do you have any theories as to who that person could be or what kind of role they should take and what kind of powers they should have?
I think that it obviously needs a minister dedicated to the planning environment who's got wide-ranging powers that can really get the right people in the room and once and for all sorted. Every business from north to south to east to west talks about it. Nothing happens. It's not an election issue because you don't see it as a vote winner, but in terms of the treacle that's slowing down this economy, it's a disaster and it needs to be sorted out and it needs leadership.
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
Dalton Phillips, Chief Executive of the DAA there. And we will be bringing you more straight-talking viewpoints from some of Ireland's leading CEOs in each episode of Business at the Ballot Box between now and February 8th. Patricia King of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions has joined us now, and Danny McCoy of IBEC are still with us. And Danny, as we wrapped up our chat just a couple of moments ago, we ended by looking at the words social dialogue and what social dialogue, the role that might play in bringing Ireland to a better business and living environment for everybody into the future. When some people hear the word social dialogue, they may also hear the words social partnership in their heads. Is it important to make the distinction between the two before we have this conversation?
Well, I guess it comes down to what you're talking about. In the social part is to bring all the actors in society into a conversation, be that business, trade unions, NGOs that represent the environment, the social pillar. Because my point being that right now, if we're all in silos, and we're still complaining about the lack of public infrastructure, housing, childcare, and so on, if we keep going the same way we're going, we'll keep making the same mistakes. So we need to have some kind of break on this. And the dialogue is not just about the public-private or the infrastructure. We're going to have to do it on the environment now as well. And also, critically, this generation of people are going to have to deal with the all-island issue and how we allocate resources between all of those competing factors. And if we don't do it together, if we believe the government will mediate it for us, I think we're going to be mistaken, because the government is actually, as a share of the economy, is declining. The government doesn't have all the answers, and they need to bring in all the other actors, because we will have to have trade-offs.
And Patricia, I'm going to ask you about your reaction to that in a second, but maybe just to give you a little bit more context in terms of the opening to this podcast, where really the tenet of the conversation I had with Danny was around the fact that Ireland is growing, business is growing very quickly, and the ratio of private versus public services is growing quite wide, okay? And that is going to start to cause cracks. Do you agree that something needs to happen and the next government needs to take a position on trying to approach the next few years in a better way so that that doesn't happen?
Yeah, I would. I think that the demographics, future demographics of Ireland, if you look even over the next 50 years, the expectation is that there will be in or around just a little over 6 million people living in Ireland. There are all sorts of issues about even the age groups within that cohort, but that will mean having a very planned approach to key things like health, education, and planning for that in a number of ways. Planning to ensure that services can be delivered, and we would very much take the view in Congress that the best delivery is through the public service of those sort of services. But you have to plan to house people, you have to plan to have children and people educated, you have to have all of that in a planned way if your demographics are rising. So from that point of view, the expansion of the public service, and you hear a lot of talk about we need more nurses, we need more doctors. As the demographics change and as the population increases, you're going to need more of all of these different professions to provide the services, but you have to do it in a planned way. So if you match that in then to the public infrastructure and the public service that we need, by, we will have to transition to a green economy. So we have to transition into having a public services that is built not on pumping out diesel and petrol fumes into on our streets. We're going to have a far different way of delivering that service. We're going to have a far better transport infrastructure and so on. So you have to plan for all of those. And from our perspective, that's doable. It's doable within an expanded public service. And we need to know that in the next 3 to 5 decades, we're not having, for instance, the bulk of the workforce landing on the capital every day via commuter routes that are already choked. We need to be able to plan. And part of Project 2040 that the outgoing government was involved in actually was about trying to plan that so that you have main cities and indeed satellite towns where people can live comfortably, where people can have access to public services like education, like health and so on, and where they can have a decent job. So that workplaces offering decent work actually can be located in these areas. So that's all part of a future planning that we are fully agreeable to and think it's a good thing to do.
And in terms of Danny's point around the need for social dialogue and the distinction between social dialogue and what we knew as social partnership, what are your views on that?
Well, I think the key from our point of view and the message we want to emphasise is that it's about meaningful, timely and meaningful discussion that will allow us to be involved and to influence the development of policy. So until now, when social partnership itself broke down, there has really been very little. We have been involved in a very narrow consultative process. You were being told about things after they had happened. We already knew them really before we went into any dialogue. So the level and the quality of the dialogue has been very low. And from our point of view, that's regressive. The whole of Europe, if you listen to the current president, van der Leyen, I mean, she is saying we need to get this social dialogue piece right. That does not mean that we're going to agree with everything the employers say, or indeed the employers are going to agree with us. But on labour market issues, for instance, we should be able to forward and put forward policies, propose policies that could at least be scrutinised, that we can research, that we can look at, and we should know that they are going to be debated, that they're going to be scrutinised, and that the employers will have a reasoned argument as to why they should or should not be implemented. Likewise, the employers should also know on labour market issues that we can do the same. And to be honest with you, I think it's in the interests of any government that you have stability in terms of the context of this sort of dialogue. Now, that does not mean that governments should be compelled to take everything on board. But if they have a very broad, well-researched debate and discussion which draws some conclusions on certain matters relating to the labour market, for instance, they should be well advised, or they'd have to think a lot before they would ignore them. And we haven't had that. To answer the question of social partnership, I think most people know I wasn't a great lover of the precise social partnership model that we had. I thought there was an issue relating to elected representatives of the Oireachtas being somewhat isolated from it, and a lot of activity going on in social partnership without the input, and to some degree lessening the value of the input of elected representatives. And I didn't like that. I just thought that was wrong. And so therefore, I am much more comfortable, I have to say, with a well-structured framework of social dialogue.
Danny?
Yeah, the same. I mean, myself and Patricia have actually experienced the Brexit stakeholder group, which has got elected representatives from both government and opposition in there, as well as a wider. And it's consultative. And of course, it was a much easier task in that in this last phase, we were all in it together. We were kind of observers of another country. But what it got across to us, I think, was the fact that we can put those groupings together and we can get that underpinning support for where, as a society, we want to go. As Patricia said, we will disagree on lots of things. So, for instance, when I'm saying that we clearly need more public infrastructure and more public services around that, I'd be agnostic in terms of how the public services are delivered, whether they're outsourced like agency nurses or whether the nurses are in the public employment. Patricia and Congress have a different view on that. It's perfectly legitimate. But what we're saying is that the ratios have gone out of kilter and have consequences for our society and comes back in. So the consultative part about social dialogue isn't just so much that we'll be told about things, as Patricia said, but actually that we come to a determination on the allocation of resources. We've actually done this together as well around the training fund and the university funding. The Cassell's report asked for a contribution from the government, from students. That bit didn't happen, the students, and from employers. And we used the PRSI to do that. And there was an agreement, an identified need to get a training fund together for apprenticeships to deal with the future of work and so on. So, you know, actors can agree on the broad parameters, allocate resources towards that. The actual composition of it may reflect ideological preferences. We can disagree on some of the detail, but it's the steering of the economy so it doesn't lose its shape. And my argument is that we're losing our shape right now, and that could be quite disastrous. And we see the kind of lifestyle consequences for people who are working, but the long commutes, the childcare issues, the feeling that they're not being rewarded at the end of the day when they put all the costs together. That I think we can have an agreement on. And then the other part of society is not just about employers and the unions, is there's an awful lot of people who are actually nowhere near the labour force. Our main area of where we come together between the unions and employers is clearly on the labour market issues. But there's a whole host of our society that's not participating at all. And they've a legitimate right and a say in the way we allocate resources as well.
And how those resources are allocated, and I guess how these public services that we're talking about are paid for. Patricia, do you think that there's going to be agreement in terms of how that is done between the trade union movement and employers?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say there would be agreement, but I think one of the key pieces in this is that we must, in a sense, equip ourselves with all of the facts. And we have failed to do that on quite a number of topics. If you take, for instance, just Danny mentioned the issue of education and apprenticeships and so on, and the training fund. And there are lots of myths out there in relation to this. I'm a very strong advocate and have been, and I'm on the Apprenticeship Council, for apprenticeships to be much wider in terms of their coverage and so on. Now, there are issues around all of that, but if you take us in comparison to Germany, 48% of youngsters can sign up to, in any year, to apprenticeships in Germany. We're at less than 1%. We're sending, I would argue, in some cases children, in some cases young adults, depending on their age, 17, 18, 19, putting them through a third level education system, for instance, which doesn't suit all of them. But we're doing it because there's pressure. There's pressure from lots of areas, including parents, that happens. The dropout level at first year is very high. And part of that is because these youngsters haven't found their niche. And part of it is because we have we're much lower in terms of our coverage of apprenticeship, our investment in apprenticeship. Now, we should be having adult conversations about all of this. That will involve universities having problems. Oh, we lose funding and all of those various different things. But social dialogue to me would be where we would be in a conversation with employers and the state groups that need to be involved in it, and have a mature discussion about how do you address that. Now, that doesn't mean that Danny and I go in holding hands and being all delighted with one another. We're going to disagree on some fundamentals, but at least we should have a forum where all of the real facts are out there, where we can have a very clear discussion on this and possibly draw some conclusions. But even if you don't draw conclusions the first day, knowing the facts and being able to discuss it and debate it until you get to a stage where the government of the day, the policy makers and developers say, we're going to have to do X, Y and Z to try and count. So there are several examples. Actually, the debate we're seeing going on at the moment in the election in relation to pensions is an example. Had that debate been accompanied by factual, taking account all of the stuff that people, you know, need to know when they're discussing that, both the impact of a decision to take it away from people, the impact in relation to cost into the future demographics, and all of the things that influence that. We didn't have any of that discussion. A decision was made. A lot of upset people. So therefore, we're saying from in Congress, have quality, timely debate and dialogue with properly researched information on the table. And I think that that can only add to the quality of policy development in the country.
Makes sense, Danny?
Yeah, of course it makes sense. And so we're, you know, we have to have a construct for the society we have now. You know, when we were in the downturn, social partnership, social dialogue may not have been as necessary. And in fact, during the Troika era, we had others making decisions for us. But I think the great gap in the last number of years, we could have, as Patricia said, mediated quite a number of these social, economic issues. We wouldn't solve everything. We're not living in splendid nirvana when we get together. But we could at least, I think, have collectively come to a better decision, because right now, if you just take a look at that pension age, it's been mixed up, the mandatory retirement age being mixed up with the transition to the old age pension. The distinction within the public sector versus the private sector gives rise to a whole lot of confusion and a whole lot of standing apart from each other, when in fact, you know, the great thing about our society right now, we've, this generation has a huge opportunity to put Ireland on a more sustainable path, environmentally sustainable, society sustainable, and potentially all islands sustainable. I think it's a great opportunity, but we can only do it collectively. Unions can't do it on their own, employers can't do it on their own, can't even do it together. We need a wider social dialogue.
Acknowledging that the word social dialogue is may still be caught up and bring back memories for people of social partnership, do you believe that there is some work to be done in terms of, I suppose, branding social dialogue, making sure that people understand that this isn't what you did not like in the past and what we believe did not work out, but this is a new thing? So I guess what I'm asking is there a bit of work to be done to bring members along, perhaps on both sides, on this journey?
Well, I think in the old social partnership model, we had two things fused. One, it was a pay-determining body, private and public sector pay. It was a national pay-determining body. If you take that out of the mix, which definitively it's out of the mix from our point of view, we've no interest in going into a national pay discussion forum at all. So if you take that, well, then what are you doing there? Well, you're doing what we've just described in terms of influencing and trying to influence public policy and the development of public policy. And I think if both the employers and the trade unions, which is certainly what we said to the outgoing government in relation to the Labour Economic Forum, we said we should be in a position to put forward subjects and topics that could be discussed and debated. There should be quality research provided by the state to allow those debates happen in a mature way, without diminishing anybody's entitlement to take a stance on it. But at least if you have the debate based on the facts, that can be quite challenging for people. So therefore, from our point of view, this wouldn't be a simple task, but by the same token, we think it will be very valuable task. Now, I think there are very few of our members who would not want to have a forum whereby they could actually feel that their points of view are taken on board coming through the democratic process through the trade unions, and that it arrives in a place where their points of view are tabled in relation to these issues. Now, it takes leadership then to mediate back through the system why your best idea actually didn't appear in a policy, or why your best idea did appear in a policy. So from that point of view, I think that that sort of dialogue takes a little bit of time for people to get traction, for people to have a full understanding of its value. But if we do it correctly, now we have to try and convince an incoming government and the officials who work with them that this is valuable and that this can actually be a contributor to better public policy rather than not. And I think that's a task that Danny and I have into the future to do that.
Has the government expressed a view on this idea already?
Well, I think we will see some of this come through in the programme for government. As Patricia said, we did a limited aspect of this around the labour market, where we don't want to go back to centralised wage bargaining from any quarter, it would appear. As Patricia said, that was the model before, which was a combination of tax cuts and modest wage increases. We're now in a very different scenario. It's actually public services are the efficient part in our society. So that aspect about how to fund it in terms of proxy tax increase or borrowing from the households is going to be part of that mix. Whether that can be done through the labour market or not is actually the challenge. It's probably the best place to be for it to happen, because if we don't see the labour market rewarding people and rewarding them with the public infrastructure that they require as well from their efforts, I think there'll be a kind of a kickback. And if that then becomes a kind of random legislation, which sometimes happens as a result of that, you know, you start to make labour expensive, or you start to make it awkward to employ or dangerous to employ. And one of the things in the modern world is you'll see more capital coming into play, more artificial intelligence, more robotics and so on. And that would be to the detriment of the households. And so the households really have to encourage the partners in the labour market to try and sort out this conundrum we have right now.
So, okay, to wrap up our conversation, finally, assuming that the members of the next Government of Ireland are listening to this conversation, what message, and I'll start with you, Danny, what message would you like to give them in terms of why they should support and engage with this social dialogue that we're speaking about today?
Well, first of all, show leadership and be mature enough to know that the government doesn't have all the answers. And increasingly, that's evident, that a lot of the things that have actually driven the success and the amount of money in our economy were decisions that were taken place not in Dublin, in Paris and in other jurisdictions. And so have the wisdom to know the difference, that the government can control this economy. It's an open, globalised economy, but together we can control the society, but only if they have all the actors pulling in the right direction.
And Patricia, your message finally?
My message to them would be that they would be big enough and show leadership in terms of understanding that they have to listen, and that it's not just about their policy developers, that a good, broad, informed, timely debate on the development of policy with the key stakeholders is a very valuable thing to have, and that it's very valuable from their point of view, because they are likely to deliver a far better quality policy if they do it than if they don't.
Patricia King of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions and Danny McCoy of IBEC, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on this. It's a fascinating discussion, and we'll keep an eye on how government engages over the next few months. And that's all we've got time for in this very first episode of Business at the Ballot Box. Thanks to all of my guests today: Patricia King, General Secretary of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, Dalton Phillips, CEO of the Dublin Airport Authority, and Danny McCoy, CEO of IBEC. If you'd like to join the conversation on Twitter or LinkedIn, use the hashtag #BeTheVoice. You can also email us at info@ibec.ie. And of course, make sure to follow us or subscribe to the series wherever you get your podcast. In our next episode, we will be getting to the heart of childcare and elder care in the company of Anne O'Leary of Vodafone, Brendan Courtney, who of course has been a prominent campaigner on this issue in recent years, and Cara McGann, Head of Policy right here at IBEC. Hope you can join us then.
Business at the Ballot Box. Be the voice.